This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Dab Nation, this is Jonathan Kuminga. You're listening to the Morning Roast with Joe Spadoni and Joe Shiesky on 95.7 The Game.
What are you laughing about over there? What are you doing?
Shout!
No, it's jump.
No, I say shout.
Why?
Whenever this song goes on, I go, shout! Yeah, I know it's jump, but I always say shout. As in get up and shout.
That's a different song.
Yep.
I'm just saying. I'm just saying. You look great today, by the way. You're happy. We got one more segment left. We're going to drive up to the Stone Tree Golf Course for the Agape Charity Golf Tournament brought to you by ACCO. And we're going to be having fun. We're going to hit some balls, and we're going to, you know, try to attempt to play the game of golf. And we'll do a good job. Steiny and Gurney are going to be broadcasting live from there.
Haven't 10 played to in 2, a while.
Nor have I, but that's okay. You're not going to sandbag me. I'm not going to allow it.
Well, I'm just setting myself up for playing terrible.
Well, that's all right. That's what I do every time anyways. I attempt to play golf.
Under-promise, over-deliver.
That's right. And you know what? The Warriors, you know, did not under-promise. They promised, and they delivered. How about that? Because when you got Stephen Curry, you can do that, Joe. And they'll have Stephen Curry back in action tonight. They'll have Draymond Green. The question is, will they have Jimmy Butler, who did not play, obviously, with a gluteal contusion on Saturday? Hopefully, it's feeling a lot better, and then he can play and put the clamps on this series to go up 3-1. That would be huge. Obviously, the team you're going to be playing up against, it's looking like, the series isn't over, but looking like the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are up 3-1 over the Los Angeles Lakers right now. And as we know, statistically, teams that go up 3-1 in any series, they're probably going to win it. And I'm going to look it up right now. 3-1 NBA lead percentage series win. I'm going to have it right here. Shout out AI. 95.4% of the time in an NBA best of seven playoff series, that team goes on to win.
There is not a single Warrior fan here that takes a 3-1 lead for granted.
That's right. 226 out of 237 series where that team is up 3-1, they win. So that's what the Warriors have on deck tonight.
The difference between 2-2 versus 3-1 heading back to Houston with 2 out of 3 games being in Houston, it feels Grand Canyon-esque. This is a game they have to have. And if you lose tonight, it's as if game one never happened, right? That part of winning on their home floor is you have to hold serve while you're on your home floor. And this team needs to have the rest. They need to have the continuity, the studying, you know, for them to incorporate some of the subtle adjustments. You can't get into an opportunity where foul trouble, you know, your health, flagrant situation, mm-hmm. whether it comes to technicals and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
all of that can factor in to the final couple of games. And we just don't need to play around with that. And why give a young team any kind of confidence?
Well, exactly. And speaking of confidence, that's the big word for me, because I do think it was the opposite for the Warriors on Saturday. They gained a whole hell of a lot of confidence, I feel like. Quentin Post, his shot's not there yet. And when it comes around, that's scary hours for the rest of the league as far as I'm concerned. Brandon Pajemski has not really shot the ball all that well. Game one, it was solid, but he can get better. I feel like Moses Moody, we're waiting for him to break out. We saw the breakout game finally from Buddy Hield,
yeah,
and we saw it from Gary Payton II. So if those guys can do it, I know Moody, Post, Pods, one of those guys, two of those guys can do it. And how big would it be to have any of those guys do that tonight with Jimmy Butler coming back? That's a recipe for success, recipe for a win, and putting the clamps in the chokehold on the series overall.
Whose offense is more sustainable in tonight's game if Jimmy plays? Is it Buddy or GP2?
Boy, it's a great question. I want to say Buddy Hield. I know, it's, you laugh. Like, I want to say
Buddy's actually been good defense. Like, on his scale, defensively, he's been good.
He had 3 steals.
He's gotten a lot of loose balls.
It's where Buddy gets himself into trouble is what Jimmy Butler makes fun of him for all the time. It's like, you just stop dribbling. It's not like, stop. You're not You're not Kyrie Irving, buddy.
But on
all
this
right,
team,
stop.
When they're searching for offense, sometimes he has to put the ball on the floor. I'll defend him on that.
I don't want to see that, though. Can I have anyone else with handle? Well, that's
this
actually,
is why Pods play so much.
Again, who I also don't think has the best handle, but and he gets himself into a lot of trouble. But that's okay. Not every team is built to have great handles on it, and that doesn't mean anything. I think the Rockets have some good guys that have good handles, but they can't shoot the ball. So it really doesn't matter all that much. And they try to set up other people who also can't shoot the ball very well. So it's all baked into the equation. Like the Rockets, they showed you who they are. In the first or two out of these three games, they've showed you who they are. Like they're a very inconsistent offensive team. If I can get any semblance of consistency with the Golden State Warriors team that have better consistent offensive players, I feel like, and Jimmy Butler being part of that, that's why him being back would be massive. If they can just not turn the ball over, you're winning this game. And I thought Jay Billis brought up a great point when I said, is there anything the Rockets can do in this game to like help them win? Like taking it from these two losses that they've had, what can they do in this game four that they haven't done? And he just said, can you make your damn free throws? Well, I don't think they can. They're just not a good shooting team.
Yeah, but you've got to think that Shingun can play better.
Yeah.
You got to think that Jalen Green is going to have at least one other game. He's not going to go out with a whimper. He's going to have another game. And at some point, I think they need to play Jabari Smith more. I would actually consider maybe even playing him and get Fred VanVleet off the floor. That's what I would do.
Well, they started doing what we've been telling them to, finally. They were attacking Fred VanVleet defensively.
You're talking about the Warriors.
The Warriors, excuse me. Like, I saw early on in that first quarter, and I was going nuts. I sent it to the chat. Kuminga was isolated on Fred VanVleet at the top of the key. I was like, dude, go at the guy.
Yeah, but he's afraid. When he does that, he goes up with them crazy left-handed layups, and everyone goes nuts.
No, but he did do it again when it was a baseline, yes, and it was inside.
Spun backwards.
He did a six-spin move on
really
him.
Really nice.
Just yammed it on him. I think Draymond Green took him to task at one point, too. I was like, dude, this guy is not 6'10". Fred VanVleet is 6 feet tall.
The irony of Draymond telling others to be more assertive offensively.
Right? No, it's funny, right? That's another thing baked in this situation. Like, Draymond Green only had 7 points. I know he could score more. And I actually didn't hate that he attempted 4 3-point shots. He was open. He took them. All right.
Yeah, but the early shot clock ones for me, because he doesn't have it going right now, like, when and where they are matters to me with Draymond.
He had the third most shot attempts out of anyone, by the way, on the Golden State Warriors. Obviously, Steph had 23. Then he had Buddy Hield. Then he had Draymond Green, 3 of 11 overall. Like, there's going to be a better Draymond Green where he does knock down a couple of these threes, and those are going to be backbreakers for the Houston Rockets.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think Pods as well, who was only 1 of 6 from beyond the arc. Speaking...
Well, he's going to continue to get wide open looks. Right. He's got to hit.
Right. And, well, Steve Kerr talked about the guys that did hit and the guys that did step up on Saturday's win. Here's the head coach talking about it.
Buddy flipped it. Gary Payton flipped it. Both those guys. But everybody contributed. You know, Quentin had 12 rebounds. We had Moses come in and make a huge three in the second half. But this is what the playoffs are about. You know, they're about injuries and they're about guys stepping up. And we had both today. With Jimmy being out, you have to be able to withstand that and win a game here and there. We've done that for many years. We've had some of our most important guys, you know, miss multiple games in series. So this is what you have to do. You got to find a way, and our guys did that today.
And you got to find a way tonight, game four. Is this a must win for you, Dub Nation? 888-957-9570. Shasky's going into it like the Warriors have to feel like it's a must win. Do you have that same mentality heading into tonight's game? Same number, call or text the Boxer and Gerson text, work injury attorney's text line, excuse me, at 888-957-9570.
Do you have any issues with people not wearing the shirts?
No.
They give out shirts at these games now. Well, they've been doing that for quite some time. And which is cool. It's like a memento, you know, for people to hang on to. Right. And nothing's cooler than having like a box of t-shirts from all the different playoff runs and whatnot. But a lot of people aren't wearing the shirts, and there's a lot of outrage online. Shocking.
Really?
Outrage online.
People are mad that they're not wearing the
giveaways? Yeah, they're not wearing the shirts.
Are they you can. You don't have to.
Well, if you bought a, you know, $200 jersey.
No. Well,
I'm not mad at you for wearing the $200 jersey.
No, hell with the jersey. If I bought the $200+ ticket, I could do whatever the hell I want in my seat. Don't tell me what to wear. Like, I get it. I hear you. You want to, like, you have to create that effect. But you saw it with the Rockets. I saw a lot of people in Houston. They had tried to do the red out or whatever. Mm-hmm. They weren't doing it. They were in white. They were in black. It's like, yeah, if I have my Stephen Curry, blue jersey from, I don't know, the We Believe days maybe, yeah, I'm rocking it. Like, whatever. Sue me. What are you going to do, huh? But how do you feel about it? Let me ask you. I don't care.
I'm indifferent, quite frankly. I think that the t-shirt thing has run its course. I get why you do it. I would go towels and have everyone waving the towels
and easier.
Do something different because it does feel like the t-shirt thing has run its course. I mean, when you've been doing it for 20 years, started with We Believe for us, and it does feel like it's a little, not that it's played out. I would just try something different.
Is there anything in like games that bother you? Like the little like subtle things like that, like in playoff mode, like there are people, and I can't believe I'm saying this. There are people like, and I hate at concerts, it's different. Like when you're standing up, right? You're standing up. It's like, oh, hey, sit down. Like early on in a game, is it ever acceptable to be standing up?
So I have a whole fandom kind of report card on this.
Please. Thank you. This is his draft fandom report card.
Look, if you go to a game and you spend money on some level, you should be able to stand and cheer and do whatever you want. Simultaneously, you also need to be self-aware of the people behind you. Mm-hmm. And if they, for health, age, whatever reason, can't get up in their seat, then, you know, as best you can, you try to be respectful of the people behind you because there are some older people that just maybe can't stand or they have health issues or whatever. So I do believe like, yes, Joe, 9 times out of 10, stand, no doubt about it. But if the people behind you are a little older and maybe they're struggling to get up out of their seat, that's where I'd be like, hey, like when I'm in that situation, I'll stand. I'm so sorry that the people in front of me are standing and I can't see unless I stand. And then they usually go, oh, it's all good. Right. But like, I always feel bad for people behind me that can't get up.
Shout out Life Alert. I've fallen and I can't get up, but I hear you on that. It's more so like concerts for me where people have the audacity to say, you need to sit down. It's like, no, dude, like I'm here having, I'm dancing with so-and-so. Like I'm having a good time. All right. Sue me. Sorry. This is a concerts are different than
concerts are way more free,
right?
The seats are very loose.
Yes.
You're dancing, you're moving around.
There you go.
You know, games tend to be a little more, you know, intense. You're sitting in my seats.
We could continue to talk about this. I did want to talk.
I just thought the arena was loud though.
No,
I felt Chase the
Center,
vibe.
I thought Chase Center was popping on Saturday night. Again, we were talking about this earlier and we were comparing Levi's and like Candlestick and Chase with Oracle. It's different, right? It's never going to be the same. And that's okay because you have memories built into those places. That's why like nostalgia always hits better. That's why for a certain generation, it's always going to be Michael Jordan because that was my guy, right? For, you know, your parents are like, it's always going to be Willie Mays. You didn't see Willie Mays. Or like my dad, you didn't see Bill Russell, right? Or Wilt Chamberlain. That's fine. No, I didn't. Like I saw a little bit of Mike. I saw LeBron. I saw Kobe. Like, and we're seeing Steph right now. It's going to be different, right? But that being said, that doesn't take away anything that I felt from Chase Center on Saturday. And I want that same energy tonight because it's going to be different. That was a Saturday game around 5 o'clock. This is going to be Monday around 7 o'clock tip right here, 95.7 The Game. Coverage of that starts at 6 with Warriors Live. Again, voice of the Warriors, Tim Roy on the call, Tom Tolbert. Catch all the postgame action. Evan Giddings, Mark Grandy doing a hell of a job. Get there early, account for traffic, get in those seats, and be loud early, and you guys matter in a game like this. It matters in a game like this because I want those young Rockets players to be feeling that pressure.
Shane Goon felt it down the stretch.
I need them to feel it early on in this game.
I'm with you on that. There is something real to these new stadiums that is impossible to ignore. When you used to go to Candlestick or to Oracle or
Coliseum,
part of going to the game was you knew on the front end, if I go to the bathroom right now, it'll be so backed up, I'm going to miss 15 minutes of action.
Shout out the troughs.
If I go get a beer right now or I go get some food right now, it's going to take 20 minutes. So the old stadiums, you knew that you were there for the game.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got up, you were missing way too much of the action. Second part, none of the older stadiums had the entertainment areas. Now, I know Oracle at the end built like a, not a Modelo Club. I forget what they called it up top, but they built like some sort of a little like area where everyone could hang out or whatnot. The new stadiums have those everywhere where it's more like standing room only, party atmosphere, big televisions. And what that does, it drives people out of their seats. Organically, they're going to want to hang out, have a drink.
Yeah.
Because there's great food, because there's great amenities and all that stuff, people do get out of their seats at halftime. When you were at Candlestick, if you left for halftime, it was to literally just walk for 5-10 minutes, and then you ran back to your seat because you knew if you were standing in the concourse, you couldn't watch the game.
No.
There wasn't enough television. There wasn't a flat screen. So I think the newness and all that stuff, like, it actually is impossible to overlook that. It does take you out of your seat.
It does.
And that's part of the beauty of a new stadium and part of what will never be able to be replicated from the old stadiums.
I'm usually, like, more lenient on the people that are getting, like, back at halftime. Like, well, oh, there's so many empty seats at halftime. I was like, yeah, because halftime takes a long time. Everyone's getting up, and you're all doing your business. You're getting food. You're checking on so-and-so. Like, I get that. It's the start of the game for me tonight, 7 o'clock. You got to be there.
For sure.
I want the Rockets to feel it early because the last thing the Rockets want, because they've kind of low-key dominated the first quarter in a lot of these games. Like, can the Warriors flip the script on them early in this one?
I thought they closed the first really well,
no,
too.
No, they did. No, absolutely. I'd agree. I thought Fred VanVleet was keeping them afloat, the Rockets, that is. And outside of the first quarter, he only made one shot.
Yeah.
He wasn't doing a whole hell of a lot. That's a credit to what the Warriors were doing defensively, and Steph Curry in particular. But I want early in this game, I want them to feel it. Like, that's my recipe. Get on a lead, sit on it early, and I think you're going to start seeing a panicked Rockets team. And they're going to start doing some, maybe, I'm not going to say clown behavior, but they're going to start doing some stuff. If they get down big, they're going to start, you know, exposing themselves as a young team.
Well, the one thing the Warriors did really well in this game was Curry brought the ball up more than I've seen him do that. And so I think he had more room to operate when that double came, and they weren't just bringing up a lazy high pick and roll to bring a second defender up. Rockets went zone too.
Right.
I wonder if they're going to try to do that again.
They got to try something.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm looking at more, like, defensively, I think they're, like, again, I think they're fine, like, defensively. The fact of the matter is, and it was our guy who we had on a couple weeks ago from the Rockets pre and post on the radio station out there in Houston. The name's escaping me, excuse me. But the guy's name was Adam Wexler. It was when Bonte was filling in for you. He said this series is going to come down to Jalen Green scoring. And really, it has.
Wow.
Like,
That's
what he said. He's like, the Rockets will win if Jalen Green scores. They'll lose if he doesn't.
Well, he hit a three at the end of the first quarter. I go, uh-oh, here we go.
And he didn't do anything after that.
No.
I mean, 4 of 11 overall for him.
JK did a pretty good job on him. And GP2 did a really good job on
him. 9 points, 6 boards, 5 assists for him. I mean, the only thing he really did was get into Draymond Green after the game. And Fred VanVleet had to come over there and break it up. Like,
I call that the loser's limp.
Mm.
Right? Like, when the game's over and you want to, like, talk, it's like, come on, man, you got to play during the actual time when the clock's ticking.
So
don't wait till afterwards to talk.
So it's not Alperen Şengün for me. Like, he's going to get a double-double probably tonight. It's what's Jalen Green doing? If Jalen Green's not doing anything, like, the Warriors are probably going to win this game.
Well,
like,
and
that's it.
And Dylan's been one of their more reliable perimeter shooters.
Fouled out.
No, I know.
Like, that, like, they needed him, and he fouled out. Like,
I actually think he's gotten a pretty poor whistle.
And
if I'm being fair,
yeah,
I didn't love the off-ball foul that fouled him out. I thought it was kind of weak.
I have no, no problem with him not getting a great whistle right now, Dylan Brooks. I'll just say it. I really don't know. And Warriors fans don't feel like that.
Why do I have a feeling one day at the end of his career he'll be a Warrior?
Oh my God. Well, just like your boy Chris Paul, right? A Warriors legend.
My boy.
888. I'm looking at that, by the way, right now. The Chris Paul is Gary Payton, the comparison, land of basketball. It's a lot of green checks for one Chris Paul.
Because he stayed in the league forever.
Not really. They've, like, he only has, like, one more season than him at this point.
Yeah, but Gary Payton, when he came into the league, he was not a starter right away.
Okay.
Number 2 overall pick. The arrows were different. You didn't just play on the New Orleans, whatever they were at the time. I don't know if they're the Pelicans or the Jazz. Just right, here you go. Just go out there and play.
Well, he was rookie of the year. That meant something. Weren't they a playoff team, too? He was pretty damn good. I'm just saying.
You're showing your age.
No, I'm not. I think you're showing your age, too. You want to cling to the old guys. It's okay. It's okay. Don't worry about it. You want to get into some football here? We got 10 minutes.
One guy is known as a winner, and one of the, like, I don't back down in the face of adversity, and I lost to the greatest of all time. The other guy is literally known for choking it away every year in the playoffs.
Okay, let's relax here. When they were both the best players on their given teams, neither of them won NBA championships. One won a championship because he joined, was at the Heat with Dwayne Wade and Shaq towards the end there.
He was also on the Lakers, too.
He was, and they lost.
Yeah.
So I'm just letting you know. All NBA selections in total, 11 for Chris Paul, 9 for Gary Payton. All defensive teams tied total selections at 9 apiece. Assists leader, 5 times for Chris Paul, Gary Payton, 0. Steals leader, 6 for Chris Paul, 1 for Gary Payton. Gary Payton does have a defensive player of the year. Chris Paul, as I mentioned, has the rookie of the year. Points per game, 17 to 16.3 in favor of Chris Paul. Rebounds in favor of Chris Paul. Assists per game in favor of Chris Paul.
I pulled
Paul.
Up the 10 Steals. Years in a row. 10 years in a row for Gary Payton. He averaged 40 minutes a game.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then?
Averaged 40 minutes a game.
Yeah. What do you want me to do with that? Okay. That's fine. He's a great player. We're comparing two Hall of Famers.
This is like me trying to break down Jack Clark's swing. Like, I let it be. Like, I'm going off the players that I saw, and I'm taking Gary Payton all day.
You know what I'm taking all day? It's Warriors Live today, presented by Xfinity. Stream sports from the best seat in the house of Xfinity. Bring on the good stuff. You know what else I'm going to be locked into in the meantime? Maybe I'm going to be listening to this on my way up to Novato for the Agape Charity Golf Tournament. Steiny and Goo, 10 to 2, live from there at Stone Tree Golf Course, presented by Atco Pest Control. I'm going to listen to the Garlic Fries and Baseball Guys podcast. Sam Lubman and Joe Shasky, and occasionally Steven Rizzotto, have the best Giants talk in the world. Subscribe now, because this week they'll be talking about how the Giants, owners of the second best record in all of baseball, have not even begun to play their best baseball yet, Joe. Big series win over Bruce Bochy and the Texas Rangers. Two walk-off wins after celebrating Brandon Crawford Day on Saturday. Nice to see, was it BC Raw? That's what he has to be called?
BC Raw.
Oh, excuse me, DJ BC Raw with all the kids, the loved ones. That was great. And then yesterday, do we have the call? Do we have that last walk-off call? I'm throwing you on the spot, but when we can get to it, let's play it. Insanity happened yesterday. Give it to me when you can, Steven. You got it? Thumbs up.
Ramos is 1-for-2. Taps this one to third. And he throws it down the right field line. Ramos is on the move. And he is going to stop. No, now he's going to go to third. Here's the throw.
Oh, no.
It gets by him. Here comes Ramos. This game is over. Mm. The Giants win the game on a Little League home run.
Oh, heck yeah.
Tell me you've seen that one before.
Well, that's since my oldest son was 10 years old.
What did I do wrong?
Thank you, John. Dwayne Kuiper, Mike Kruger on the call, NBC Sports, Bay Area.
I would send that audio. I would package that audio, and I would send that to Rob Manfred, and I would say, tell all the data boys that the fans get excited when people are running the bases.
Of course.
Not when there's a strikeout. Not when there's even a home run. Yes, it's exciting for the time being. The most exciting play in baseball is when people are running the bases and the ball is coming toward a base and you could be tagged. That is when the crowd gets the most excited. Inside the park homers, plays at third base, plays at the plate, a steal. When the ball is in play and people are running the bases, listen to how incredible that crowd was.
It was great. I thought the crowd was popping all weekend long. Baseball is back in the Bay Area, and they're feeling it. And part of that is because the Giants are winning.
Yes.
And they're winning in crazy ways. Back-to-back walk-off wins the way they did. 19-10 on the season, 9-4 at home. I'm not sleeping on that. By the way, Camilo Duvall, balling.
It's most my call for comeback player on the Giants.
Okay, not mad at that.
In terms of guys who was going to bounce back, he's looked really good. What exactly is going on with Ryan Walker and his back? Well, is there any... I haven't heard anything regarding his back, Ryan Walker, guys. I know
I chatted with him about over the weekend. He said it's feeling a lot better right now. So, I mean, he seemed in good spirits when I was talking to him and had a couple good outings. So I think he's trending in the right direction.
Is he still your de facto closer?
I broke my back.
I think right now he's going to be the closer. He's probably going to have to, you know, have a couple more bumps in the road before they make the switch. But I think right now, yes, he is the closer.
No, it's working. Whatever's working right now, you go with it. And if there comes a point in time when he has 2-3, like, you know, shaky outings in a row, and he has a couple blown saves, then he can revisit potentially going back to Camilo Duvall. That's what I would do, and I think Dave Fleming alluded to that to us last week.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to Dave again, obviously voice of the Giants, on Wednesday. We'll talk to Anthony Slater at some point this week
Also Wednesday.
Also Wednesday, great. So, again, Giants, just keep doing what you're doing. It's okay. Everyone, like, people are like, why are you talking about the Giants? I don't need to talk about them right now. Don't care about the national media saying, let them talk about their Dodgers, their Yankees, you know, the Padres. That's fine. That's where I want to be if I'm the Giants right now. Going under the radar, sneaking past everybody, and then it'll be them against the world. We've seen how that movie has happened, by the way, in 2010, 12, and 14.
They need Willie Adames to like start hitting, like now.
Well, hey, he walked twice yesterday. Okay. So that's something.
He snapped a 5-game hitting streak yesterday, too.
There you go.
I mean, they need him to get going here, Sam. Like, he's got to get hot. We're starting to turn to May. Him and Chapman have got to get rolling here, because you're not getting much production from the catcher offensively. You're not getting it from first base. Like, they need it. Jung Lee's been spectacular. Like, his This is probably the best month a Giants center fielder has had in a long, like, what, since Angel Pagan, like a decade ago?
And it's how he's doing it. And I love the swagger he has. And listen, you don't really see it too much. And I got to be careful here because the way we talk about overseas and international players is very fascinating here. When it comes to baseball in particular, because there is this notion of, oh, and we saw this a lot when it was, who was it? I got the Atlanta Braves who thought he was like the code of conduct for Major League Baseball in America.
Brian McCann.
I mean, that was that whole thing, right? About playing with joy and bat flips and stare downs and all of that. And it's like, no, you can't do that. And showing up and all this. And you know, it's baked into the Latin culture a lot, whether it's the Dominican, whether it's Mexico, whether it's Venezuela, where these guys live and breathe baseball as their national sports. Less so in Mexico. I know it's soccer, but the baseball is big there too. And it's a celebration. It's fun. It's a party. It's like you celebrate all this stuff and no one takes it seriously or personally. When you do a bat flip or take a trot around the bases and wear your big gold chains, we love that. Conversely, when it comes to players coming over from Japan or Korea, very stoic, very by the book, very like, not to say they don't play with passion or flair. I think Shohei Ohtani has a lot of that.
Yeah.
But I think the way we talk about them and view them, it's not like we talk about Latin players coming over here when the games play different. There's a different aspect and rules, and that goes back to culture and cultural settings. There's something about Jung-Hoo Lee that feels different from anyone else that I've seen coming over there. It is. The way he talks through his translator, even, he was going at whoever. What was the play that happened? Maybe, Steven, you could come in on this, where he was talking after the game about something that happened, and he was like, going at the ref and talking about the ref and saying they would made a horrible call or mistake, tapping on the helmet or something, right?
Yeah, so he fouled a ball off and it looked like a foul ball, but the umpires called it a swing and a miss on a pitch that hit him. So he went out and argued and said that the pitch didn't hit me, I made contact, and he brought his translator, Justin, who's awesome, by the way, out to argue for him.
Love that.
And yeah, a lot of people didn't see that. It was an Apple TV game, but just a really funny moment. And he did have an incident in Philadelphia too where he tapped his helmet. Umpires are kind of on edge that players are kind of showing them up if they tap their helmet, because in spring training that was the signal to challenge. So, you know, nobody's done it sarcastically, but that's what umpires are scared of, and they thought Jung-Hoo Lee did it sarcastically, but he was just adjusting his helmet. No harm, no foul.
I love bringing out the translator real quick, Joe, to talk some smack to the ump.
There's a difference. Great. There's a big difference culturally. So, like,
no, it is. That's
my neighbors are Korean,
yeah,
right? And then I have other neighbors that are Japanese, and there's a big difference in their cultures.
No, there is.
Whereas the Korean culture is very, like, live and big and totally vibrant, and the music is huge and everything. Whereas in the Japanese culture, from what I've seen, is just very more formal, more buttoned up.
It is different. No, that's why
they're very distinctly different cultures.
And I'm not trying to lump Japan in with Korea or everything. I'm just talking about how we view and talk about players that come from different countries here in America, because I think baseball is so unique in that regard.
Yes.
Because it is, you know, quote unquote, America's pastime, but it's really become a global game. Mm-hmm. And we celebrate these globals, the Fernando Tatises of the world, right? The Manny Machados of the world, Shohei Ohtani, obviously, the Ronald Acuñas, all these players baked into it. And it's just so refreshing to see an international, dare I say, he's playing like this star come here. And the way he's playing and acting, yeah, give me all the Korean home run calls. Like, those guys, it's insane what they do. He's huge. He's so damn fun. So,
but like the cultures, it's funny because, like, you're right on, like, a lot of the Japanese players, at least in terms of how they, like, Matsui,
Hideki, very stoic.
Nomo, you know, Ohtani, less is more.
Yep.
Everything, you know, your image is almost everything,
right?
In terms of how you're perceived, and you don't let your hair down at all. You almost don't even celebrate in some ways, like just a fist up by Shohei as he's rounding the bases is his way of doing it. The cultures are so different. It'd be like the culture difference between, you know, Folsom, California and Oakland, right? Just very different cultures.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it is a trip. And I think Jung-Hoo Lee is right now one of the most fun players in the NL West, which is a big statement.
No, it's huge. Again,
think about the players you have in the NL West right now.
Three of
the best teams are coming out of that division.
Corbin Carroll's been on fire. By the way,
he has been.
He's my guy who had four home runs the other day for the D-backs in one game.
Eugenio Suarez.
Oh, my God. Mariners legend, correct? Eugenio Suarez, if I want to say. Wow. Four jacks in one game. Is that still like, is that still hit for people these days? I know it feels like it happens maybe once a year. Maybe it didn't. I don't even know if that happened last year, but four home runs in one game. When's the last time someone hit five?
Well, four home runs, that's the Willie Mays number from back in the day.
Nobody's hit five.
Well, yeah. No one's hit five,
no one's
right?
Hit five.
Josh Hamilton, I remember, did it once upon a time. He had four. That has not happened, I don't want to say a lot. That's like, you know, not quite a perfect game, but five would be like a perfect game if that ever happened. That'd be insane. Wow, this show has flown by. We talked a lot of Giants right there. Was that, did that feel good? Didn't even talk about the draft. What's your grade, by the way? What's your, what are you grading it?
What, the Niners draft?
Yeah, what do they do? NFL draft.
Look, they drafted the right positions, right? Okay. Like, they needed to fix the defensive line, which they did on the first two picks. They needed to fix the linebacking core, which I'm hoping that they did.
Nick Martin.
With that third pick. And yeah, they went to some secondary. Then we found out Malik Mustafa had a torn ACL.
Yeah, what was that? What was that?
What a horrible end of the season. Juwan Jennings got tossed, didn't get the 1,000 yards. Mustafa got hurt. Like, just what an awful game that week 18 versus the Cardinal was.
So when the regular season is over for like, and they don't have to go to the playoffs, do they just not have to report anything on the injury front? I'm seriously asking. Like, I don't know if like they broke anything. Maybe they don't have to. But that was shocking to me. After the high of the weekend, you're feeling pretty good. And then it's just like, oh, yeah, one of your starters is going to be gone defensively. So a secondary that you felt that might have been already thin, just got a hell of a lot thinner. Now I'm just looking at, you know, D'Amador Lenore and who? Well, maybe it's Fast Five time. Is that right? Okay, my final thought. I'm going to go first here before I go to you, Chad.
Yeah.
As we're talking about the NFL draft, my final thought is, can someone check on Mel Kiper Jr. to see if he's okay after Shedeur Sanders, the talk of the draft, ended up being a fifth-round pick to the Cleveland Browns, who was the second quarterback they took after Dylan Gabriel, who I'm taller than, you might be taller than. They took him out of Oregon and went with the third round. I don't know what they were thinking of, but hey, Shedeur, you got selected. It's okay. And by the way, sneakily, like, it could work out for Shedeur. I want to say that first and foremost. Kevin Stefanski is on a short list for me as one of the best offensive coaches in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he did wonders with Baker Mayfield. I know the Deshaun Watson thing didn't work out. I think that was more of an ownership move than a head coaching move for him. But we'll see. I think he's making him and Flacco had their run a couple years ago. I'm very curious to see what happens there. But bringing it back to Mel Kiper, who was just livid the entire time that his number two quarterback in the entire draft fell to the fifth round. He wanted the people to feel some type of way about it.
Boomer Esiason was not happy when he was the second round pick.
Sure. Tom Brady was not happy.
They dropped.
How'd they turn out?
And you know what? Nobody's arguing that.
My point is, Race, the NFL has been clueless for 50 years when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks. Clueless.
All that,
no idea what they're doing in terms of evaluating quarterback. That's
possibly
proof. There's proof of that.
How many times
we know exactly what we're talking about with quarterback? They don't.
Mel Kiper Jr. knows more than the NFL when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks. Jimmy Clausen on line one.
So there are certain things that come into your mind when you say four home run game. Like, there's just, it's weird how my brain goes. You can look this up. 1961 against the Milwaukee Braves. I believe not only did Mays hit four home runs in that game after Alvin Dirk was not going to play him and he had like a stomach virus or he was sick or I don't even remember. Maybe virus isn't the right word. He wasn't feeling good. He wasn't supposed to play, but in batting practice, he was hitting home runs. Not only does he hit four in that game, Hank Aaron, who was playing for the Milwaukee Braves, I believe hit two, and I thought Cepeda hit another one. Look that up. 1961 against the Braves.
So there have only been, so I was actually right when I first said four home run games are it's the offensive equivalent of a perfect game. There's
Mike
only been 19 of them ever.
Mike Schmidt did it. I know J.D. Martinez has done it.
I mentioned Josh Hamilton.
Did it.
Scooter Jeanette did it for the Giants a couple years ago. No, before he came to the Giants, but he did do it though.
Okay. Oh, Scooter Jeanette for the Reds?
He's on the Reds when
Reds,
he did it,
Cincinnati,
yeah.
That's right.
Sean Green.
Wow. J.D. Martinez, did we mention him?
I said him,
okay,
yeah.
J.D. Martinez
I remember
did
J.D.
it.
Martinez. I wanted the Giants to get him 1 year as a DH.
Bob Horner did it. There you go. Ed Delahanty. There you go. 1896.
Did you look up the 1961 thing? Anyone? No? Look it up. Three Hall
Mays
of Famers hit home runs
four.
In that game.
Mays almost hit five, but he flew out to the warning track.
Was that what it was? Mm. Did Hank Aaron hit two?
I think he might have.
I think he might have.
Guys. three Hall of Famers hit home runs in that game. That's kind of like my favorite. Like, Wilt scored 100. Who was the second leading scorer?
Mike Schmidt. Did we mention him?
I said Mike Schmidt.
Mike Schmidt.
I know Mike Schmidt.
Carlos Delgado.
One of my
there
faves.
You go.
Was he a Toronto Blue Jay or a
he
Mets?
He was. He was a Toronto Blue Jay.
No, I'm saying, like, when did he do it?
2003. Again, that's
Blue Jays. Got it.
Blue Jays. He was a Blue Jay against the Tampa Bay Devil Rays.
Look up Yordan Alvarez's swing. He's a little more upright, and then look up Carlos Delgado. It's the same swing.
Mike Cameron, 2002.
Mike Cameron, wow, he was sick.
Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, wearing your hat to the side.
Yep. Mark Whitten or Whiten with the St. Louis Cardinals. Yep, and then we got all those other guys that we mentioned. Joe Adcock for the Milwaukee Braves, 1954. Are we good? We good? What do you guys got?
My final thought is Bill Belichick. I don't know if we have time to play. I just play the clip.
Play it.
Jordan was a constant presence during our interview.
You have Jordan right over there. Everybody in the world seems to be following this relationship. They've got an opinion about your private life. It's got nothing to do with them, but they're invested in it. How do you deal with that?
Never been too worried about what everybody else thinks. Just try to do what I feel like is best for me and what's right.
How did you guys meet?
Not talking about this.
No?
No.
It's a topic neither one of them is comfortable commenting on.
Well, now I kind of even more. Now I'm even more curious how they met. So, you know, way to just make it even worse.
Put that on my board. What did you just play? We're not talking about this.
Not talking about this.
Put that on my board. We're keeping that forever.
What if he just came out and said, like, we met on Tinder?
Oh, I'm sure it was something online.
See, that's when you play it, Steve.
What are some of the other dating apps?
That's for tomorrow to talk.
Grindr, I think, is one of them.
You think?
Not talking about this.
I'm sure the text line and the YouTube chat will have a lot of fun with that one. That was Fast Five, brought to you by Xfinity at home or on the go. Get the fastest internet to all your devices. Steiny and Goo next, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good.
Not talking about this.